Welcome to Skin Deep. I'm Dr. Anna Chacon, and today we have a very special guest joining us. Get ready for some expert insights you won't want to miss. Let's dive right in.
And are you from Miami? You're based out of here now, or tell me.
Yeah, I'm based in South Florida. Yes.
Okay. Where are you from originally?
Maryland.
Where in Maryland?
Columbia.
Okay.
So it's like in between Baltimore and DC.
Yeah. Okay. Excellent. And what made you move down here?
I'm a lawyer in my real life. So I went to law school and then I did on-campus interviewing and I got a job as a prosecutor and I moved down to Miami long time ago in 2004. So I've been here a long time.
Okay. Excellent. Where did you go to school?
I went to Penn State for undergrad and I went to George Washington for law school.
Okay. And then as a prosecutor, you worked where here?
Yeah, I worked at Miami-Dade State Attorney's Office. Then I did like a little insurance defense. And now I work for the federal government.
Where? Doing what?
The Office of Medicare Hearing and Appeals. So I do, I'm like an attorney advisor, basically like a law clerk.
Okay, cool. So you have also a hairline.
So I owned a salon for 10 years that I just shut down last year, but I had a salon for 10 years and we specialized in textured hair. And then from that point moving forward, I decided during COVID to launch my hair care line called Naturally Drenched.
Okay. Yeah. Excellent. And tell me about that, about your salon too. I didn't realize you had a salon as well.
So I have a daughter, she's 12, her name's Magnolia Rose. So I decided I wanted to do like a side hustle. So I was like, oh, let me start a salon. How hard could it be? And so I named
it hard.
It was very hard. And I called it Maggie Rose, named after my daughter. And, you know, we were like one of the first salons that specialized in cutting curls and coloring curls in South Florida. So we did that. And I had it for 10 years. But like during COVID 2021, I was like, you know what? I think I want to have my own hair care line. I feel like there's a void in the market for salon quality products that actually span all textures, and that's when I decided I wanted to launch Naturally Drenched. So I worked with a chemist, and like I always do, and we formulated our hero product called Rebalance. And from there, that's when I started rolling out more products from that point on.
Okay, cool. And then what would you say is the consumer, or like the typical consumer it was geared towards? Is it
Really, for me, it's really geared towards anybody who wants healthy hair, to be honest. So my specialty at the salon was curls. And, you know, so we focus on curls with our marketing, but it really is geared towards anybody that wants healthy hair. We always say, you know, at the shampoo bowl or in the shower, more of your products are geared towards what your hair needs. Like, does it need protein? Has it been color treated? Are you lacking moisture? So it's less about texture and more about the condition of your hair. So now when we get into styling, that's when we talk about different things like what kind of hold do you want? What kind of definition do you need? Things of that nature. But when it comes to the behind, like in at the shampoo bowl, health is like the cornerstone of the products that we formulate.
Okay, great. And how many years did it take to make this product? And you started with the salon first. When did you first see that there was a need for a line?
Well, I saw all along. I mean, curl care is still very, very new in the hair space. So there's still a big void, a major void in the hair space, or a lot of opportunity in the hair space, because in regards to texture, because there weren't a lot of products geared towards curly hair to begin with. And that's even when I started the salon in 2013, it was not a lot at all. So it's still very like much evolving. So I knew there was always room for it, but it wasn't till I decided like I want salon, like, to me, having something salon quality is just like you're an expert at what you do. I want something that an expert would recommend to their clients, you know, so you're not going to recommend something that's not going to work. So it's important to me and my validity and credibility that it stands on the foundation of being tested in the salon, working with stylists, because they're not going to just go out here, or at least the ones I work with, they're not, their goal is always to provide top-notch care to their clients. So they're only going to use the best. So I was like, we need salon quality products for, you know, curls. And that's when I decided, you know, I was like, okay, let me start with a hero product because launching a product line is very expensive. So you can't just, not for me, because I'm self-funded. You know, it's not easy for me to just go out and work with a chemist, source all the ingredients, and then manufacture. There's usually an MOQ, a pretty high MOQ for packaging and product formulation or manufacturing. So I started with one product, and then from there, you know, I always constantly formulate. So I formulate here with the chemist, and I also formulate abroad in Ghana with the chemist team. So we have a moisture mask, and then we also have, you know, a detox for the scalp and hair that has salicylic acid, glycolic acid, hyaluronic acid, and I'm in the process of formulating three gels now.
Wow, like hair gel, styling gels.
Yeah.
Why Ghana? I was going to tell you that I went to Guinea. I've been to Africa actually 3 times since COVID. Tanzania,
Really?
yeah, Guinea, and each part of Africa is so different. Guinea, I think, is pretty close to Ghana. Guinea was a French colony. Ghana was a British colony, I think, right?
I think
Yeah,
so. Honestly,
that's the point.
I've never been.
Okay. You've never been to Ghana?
No, I just randomly, I always tell people like I'm a Sagittarius. So I was just like, I don't even know. I was talking to my friend who was working on something, and she had been to Ghana. I think she's been like 2 or 3 times. And she was just like, yeah, I've been working with a chemist. I was like, I want to work with a chemist too from Ghana. So that was that.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, Ghana's become really popular. Like you're
Yes.
there's There's actually a lot. I think last week I was reading about handbags and made in Ghana. Okay, so did you notice like a difference in what they used in terms of cosmetic chemistry versus using an American manufacturer, someone based somewhere else? Were they trying to incorporate local ingredients
It
into?
was more so trying to incorporate local ingredients. I didn't use it, but I know okra was something that, you know, they were using in several formulations, things of that nature. I never got to that point. I did want to try to do a biochemical ingredient that was proprietary to my brand, but I haven't done it yet. And I would that my focus was going to be over there with that because they have a lot more knowledge on agriculture and are closer to it than anybody like I could really just readily find over here who could like do fermentation and things like that.
Okay, and what is MOQ? You brought that up.
So that's your minimum order quantity. So, you know, like I have aluminum packaging for one of my bottles. Like I have to order 10,000 at a time. So, you know, that's their minimum that they'll even consider doing. So,
Wow.
you know, that's typically with all of your packaging, and especially if you want it custom. And then also that goes to like batching. Like if you want to do manufacturing, usually, you know, when I bring over one of my ingredients, or I have it done, it's like 9 barrels of 55 gallons. So these are all like the costs that you have to take into consideration when launching a brand, which I didn't take into consideration, but I am now.
Okay, cool. And
You live, you learn.
how long did it take you to start this whole process? Like from idea to production, how long did it take you to start?
Well, I will say, like I said, I'm a Sag. So it took me, I was moving fast. So I got it done pretty much like within 9 months of, you know, idea, branding, sourcing my packaging, because I only had one ingredient. So it's a little bit easier for me. I'm working with my chemist because I already, because I have been in the salon for so long, I already knew what I was looking for and the concept of my hero product. Now, the stylers have taken me a lot longer. So I have like a foam out. And like I said, I'm working on three gels. So those get a little bit more technical because the chemistry is difficult in terms of like flaking, hold, like everything that I'm looking for. So I've been working on those for like 2 years. I know my chemist is over me, but
What do
yes,
you mean
I know
over
what.
you?
Because I always come back and I'm like, we're almost there, but it's not there yet.
Okay, cool. And that's excellent. So did you start initially selling at your salon since you had all these women, I'm sure, that had, the kind of textured hair that you were trying to, guide them on? And is that where you first started? And then you started, where do you sell right now? Online mostly, or?
So I started with the salon, but then I also expanded to retail pretty soon after. So I've done like with Stock at Credo, I've been on HSN, JCPenney, like I'm in 13 Loon, I'm in Urban Outfitters online. So I think that's it. I do Amazon and I do direct to consumer, and then I have a small wholesale for salons and stylists. I'm also in Cult Beauty, which is based out of the UK and ships to the EU and worldwide. And I also have a small retailer. I've worked with a couple retailers in Germany and in Kuwait.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. That's all over the place, but that's very cool.
Yeah.
And you still have a full-time job.
I still full-time job, full-time mommy.
Wow. Okay. I'm surprised that you did all of this. And you started more or less around COVID, I think,
Yes.
right? Okay, because I'm just looking online at a little bit of your history. What about COVID do you think propelled this? People not going out as much, but doing a lot of these Zooms and virtual meetings. And at that time, I don't think filters were popular yet. Now you have filters that if you don't have makeup, they can put it on you. Maybe if
Right.
you don't have hair, you can just, do a filtered wig or something. What do you think propelled, how do you think COVID changed or helped your business?
I wouldn't say it per se helped. I think I had like, I'm in Florida. Are you in Florida?
Yeah.
So we didn't shut down that long. So,
We didn't.
right. So it
No,
wasn't like
barely
I had a
anything.
whole long time to like get it done. I think I saw that there was, I think for a lot of people, there was like a surge of entrepreneurship during that time period. So I was like, you know what? Let me try this out. I also think that for me, one of the biggest problems I had, which probably coincided with that time period, was that the lack of inclusivity in the salon care market. So, because I had a salon that catered to like all textures, all types of people, but I noticed in the salon market, they don't really champion stylists of color the way that they really should. And so what I would do is like we would work with different brands. And like as a salon owner, it wasn't like anybody was sponsoring my salon. So I always paid full price for, I mean, of course you go to Salon Centric, you go to wholesale stores for professionals, but I always paid. And so what I thought was interesting was that a brand in particular would always asked to repost my stories or post that I would tag, use this product from this brand. And but then when I would reach out to them about maybe doing a salon takeover, not necessarily for me, but for my stylists, because they're the ones putting out this work. You shouldn't just use somebody's work in an effort to look like you're championing diversity, but then not really want to like have a relationship or build upon it with those people. And that really struck me too, because I was like, the stylists that I work with, they deserve to have shine too. But then I noticed when it came to curl artists, it was really not like your Latina or your Black stylist that is really getting representation. And I was like, I think it's unfair to use their work, but not want to build a relationship with them and also give them a platform to shine.
Okay, so they were reposting the stuff. You didn't feel like maybe it was authentic. And I was going to mention, we also see that a lot in dermatology too. A lot of textbooks you learn and, or teachings, they just don't have a lot on ethnic skin types. Even a lot of dermatologists just are not diverse themselves, and they're treating all these diverse patients. And there's been a movement. In fact, I just came out with an atlas with another African American dermatologist from Canada and an Asian guy. And it's supposed to be the whole spectrum of skin colors so people can learn, what conditions look like, because it was actually so undiverse, it was hard to learn what a condition looked like in ethnic skin, like what, scalp diseases look like in African Americans. And there's been a movement to just make it more diverse. So I was surprised that to hear that in the salon space and the hair care space.
And just like you know how when you go to school, most cosmetology schools, you don't learn anything about texture. Like it's not included. And mostly it's and not and to be honest, most stylists come out not specializing in textured hair because the mindset is that the larger salons don't cater to curls. And so there really isn't, you know, most of them are wanting to go to other places because they think that there's not really any money in textured hair or the money is in, you know, doing straight or like, you know, like Caucasian hair, which isn't true. So, you know, that in itself, as a salon owner, I had to work hard to establish the salon so people could see that there is a lot of opportunity here to grow. And I honestly, I follow a lot of like actually dermatologists that now cater to like brown skin.
Okay, like who? Just wondering.
I don't know, it's one with curly hair. There's one out of Chicago who has a beautiful space.
I think I know who you're talking about. I follow her too.
Her space is like, I was like, oh my gosh, this office is amazing. I know there's a really popular one in New York. I can't remember her name either. But I follow Brown Skin Derm on
Me too.
Instagram. I follow a lot of them and I always see they have like conferences. I'm like, I like that.
And then also, what about running your salon? Because I also run a practice as a small business. What advice do you have? You mentioned it being a little hard. What was hard about it? I'm just wondering if, good
Everything.
advice. Yeah.
Because I will say too, with curls, and just like we're just talking about, even with dermatology, it's not something, especially if you specialize in something, right? If you have a niche and you can't just go in and like let somebody out of school work on somebody's like for you, skin. If you were to hire somebody, you know, you would have to like they would have to have an apprenticeship or probably like, I mean, they're gonna come out, but there's things that they have to actually learn that you know that you've learned over time. And so curls is one of those things like it's not, it's different. You could cut off too much, you could cut it incorrectly. So you really have to find the talent. And then you have to find people that are dedicated to learning who are willing to like assist in a like for a while because I can't just take you out of school or even from another salon and you've never worked on curly hair, you're gonna make a lot of, you know, you're gonna make a lot of mistakes and the client's not gonna be happy. So you that was one thing was constantly looking for talent. Pretty early on, I was able to get use social media to generate a consistent following. So I think I love social media. I think it really helped a lot in terms of, you know, building the name Maggie Rose and the South Florida community. And it was, you know, consistent and people could, you know, knew they could come. We got a lot of referrals. So I just had to maintain that. You know, also doing it's just marketing, you know, doing events, making sure people are being educated. But I think that the hardest part was mainly growing the staff, you know, and keeping them there because I think the salon industry has changed a lot where, you know, back in the day, I'm like 46. So when we went to the salon, most people either worked at a salon for a long time or maybe they rented a chair. but now they have salon suites, which you all may see this too eventually, because a lot of people may feel like, oh, I could run a salon suite and maybe do like injectables or things of that nature. Like it may, there may be an idea of like, and I wonder, how do you feel about that? Because I see a lot of people who aren't actual doctors who are doing injectables. And I wonder about that.
Yeah. So yeah, you're exactly. That's an area of medicine that's constantly evolving. It's different state by state. And the laws are always changing. And of course it's, you know, it can be considered risky, because right. you have to abide by certain laws, and, all those places have to have a medical director. You know, people can't just inject, even in states where RNs are able to inject. They just can't inject without being evaluated by a provider, whether it's a nurse practitioner, PA. That could be online. That could be, but it has to be an evaluation. Like there has to be a note. There has to be a documented visit, whether it's in person or online. Because it's not, if not, it's considered practicing medicine without a license.
Right.
You know? Yeah. So it's a gray area and it's always changing. Of course, there's always been a lot of liability in medicine. So I actually don't have a whole lot of staff myself. I pretty much do everything myself because I just find it, you know, easier to do. And right now we're kind of small. And too important to delegate to someone else. But yeah, there's, like you, I'm starting to see a movement. And here in Florida, to be honest, anyone can own a medical practice. Anybody. I mean, business people to doctors to, you know, PAs, nurse practitioners, they can, to an RN or an esthetician, they can actually own a medical practice. You know, they just kind of shift a lot of the responsibility to doctors, which has become
but the doctors aren't really there though, so
and that's been a problem, because I know I think about it every day. I'm like, who would, after working this hard, you know, entrust, you know, everything they work for to someone else? You know what I mean? I can't even do it. You know, I, like you, I also interview lots of people, and somehow I don't find that, you know, they, I don't want to say that they know as much as I do, or maybe they treat things differently and I'm not comfortable with it, you know, so I just kind of end up doing a lot of stuff myself, which is a problem, because then you're inefficient, then you can't delegate, you know, something to someone else. And but yeah, it's a balance, I think.
Yeah, it's definitely a balance. You know, it's so funny because I was on a call yesterday. I'm in an accelerate program with, it's being hosted, not Rare Beauty by Selena Gomez, but it's a company called Rare Beauty Brands, and they own Patchology.
Oh yeah. That's a huge, huge thing with the patches. Yeah.
Yeah. And, I mean, I don't know if they work. I don't know how you feel about them. I don't use them, but I want, you know, I see everybody with them all over. I'm like,
me too. It's like advertising. Hi, I have a pimple.
Right.
You know? In case you didn't notice, I have a sticker right here with the pimple underneath it. That's like, to me, I don't, but people do wear them. I've even had some of my employees wear them in the office, and I'm like, what is that? Take that
I
off.
I know, they walk in, you're like, what are you doing?
We are a dermatologist's office. You are not showing the whole world that you have acne. You know. Anyway, yeah.
So, but that's what we were talking about yesterday, is like, how do you know when to hire? And you know, he gave some sage advice, and he was like, it is an element of being inefficient, but it's also a lot of responsibility when you hire people, because you don't want to hire to fire. You know, you want to, of course, if the relationship doesn't work.
An investment. It's an investment.
Yes, it's a huge investment. And you know, I have an intern, and I was telling them, I was like, they were like, they don't really believe, you know, they were discussing internships. One was like, yeah, and it's good if you can find the right person. And, but it's so, I feel like it's so hard. I don't know. I feel like an old person, because I'm just like, it's very difficult to find people that understand the level of work ethic that you require and what you need. And I find that is the hardest part. But I do find that in terms of like even email marketing would be something you probably need, SMS, things of that nature, just to keep, customer service. All of those things are things that, all businesses need to have that can make or break you, but it's also hard to, I mean, it could be expensive. So we were actually talking about that, about how sometimes you have to like maybe on a contract basis, like hire people or just like finding the right person. Finding talent is very, it's like one of the hardest parts of growing a business.
Yeah, it is because, and I tell patients all the time, not all doctors are cut equally, right? You pick a doctor, because they'll come to me and they'll say, well, so and so said this and I didn't get better or whatever, and well, you pick someone based on all their years of experience, where they came from, all their education, what they're even still doing to learn, you know what I mean? What they do for other people, and really none of them are the same. They're just not going to be the same. There's certain standards you have to go by, but still there's variations between that. And for me personally, I have wanted to be a dermatologist and a doctor probably since I could walk. I have a little photo in Scrubs for Halloween when I was a year old.
I love it.
Yeah. And that's really, so it's been like 30 something years that I have studied basically dermatology and medicine. So I tell people that I didn't just go to school for 4 years. It's been,
It's a
a
passion.
lifetime. Yeah, it's a lifetime. So,
Yes.
you kind of, and it's hard when you're interviewing people where it may not be their passion. It just might be their job and that's it. Maybe they just want this as a side job or whatever, and they're just really not passionate about it, or they just didn't have the same background
Right.
As you did. So your salon, where was it? Was it in Miami?
It was in Davie. So I'm in Broward. So I had it in Davie. I started in Miami Gardens first and then I moved to Davie. And I mean, I have to be honest, it was a good run. I don't have anything. The brand is a different,
Side of it.
say headache, but it's a different
Hustle.
rate. Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
And yeah, it's a different situation. Whereas like the salon was great for me, at the time, I was a single mom when I started it. So it was great. It provided a lot of, stability, for me and allowed me to do different things. I learned a lot about hair that I wouldn't have learned. So it really created the foundation for what I'm doing now. But, products are a different craziness.
Yeah, no, I can imagine. And how long was your salon running?
It was 10 years.
Well,
Yeah. I started when my daughter was one. It was 10 years. And I'm like I said, I'm thankful for everything that it provided. But I was glad, everything has runs its course. And I was glad to shut it down when I did. And was thankful that it gave me the validity and credibility to put out a salon quality brand. And then I think I entered into hair care products, not really, because a lot of people will start a brand and they work for like Kimberly-Clark or Procter & Gamble or L'Oreal. So I think they have more of an understanding of what it takes to go to market and be successful. And I've had a lot of wins. But it's very expensive. I mean, the marketing money alone is just
insane.
insane.
Yeah. Even as a doctor, I know that too. I mean, it's just, I feel like it's a big chunk of what I spend on, because it's yeah, it's really a lot. And how many employees did you end up having for the salon at one
Oh,
point?
it always varied. I ended up always having a manager because, like I work full time and I have, my daughter. And it just depended on what I who I always had, like towards the end I only had three people, but before that I would have like 5 to 10 people. It was decent. It was like a 1400 square foot salon, so it was a decent size, so it was good. I have nothing, when I was in it, when I was ready to close it down, it was a lot of like up and downs. I also think The one thing I like more so about the products is that custom dealing with clients is a lot more difficult than dealing with customers. So, I feel like when you're dealing with a client, especially when it's something that they're wearing out, and too, when you're servicing your clients, you're working with what people have. So a lot of times with social media, people are looking to have what they see somebody else have. Like, I want this, but well, we have to work with what you have though, not necessarily what you want, but what where you're currently at. And so sometimes that's difficult too when, people want certain things and maybe they'll never have that, or maybe it takes time to get there. So I feel like dealing with clients was a lot more, even though I never really had any terrible run-ins, but I just felt like it was a lot more stressful than I do with dealing with customers because, I'm delivering. I know I already have great products, and how somebody looks after a haircut is very subjective. Like, how you feel about your hair, do you feel beautiful? Do you embrace your curls? It's just so many different factors versus like, oh yeah, my hair is conditioned, like.
Excellent. And then a couple other things. So how can dermatologists and people that work in your space, whether it's owning a salon or having a line, work together? One of the things I thought about doing is meeting salon owners, because I'm sure that they see a lot of
Absolutely.
pathology, pathology, nail salons too. I'm sure they see a ton of nail fungus and they're like, oh God, what can I do about this?
And we actually would refer a lot of people to dermatologists. So I think that's a smart idea because hairstylists are not meant to diagnose like a scalp condition at all. So we would always, even if there was like anything open or excessive, we would say, listen, go see your dermatologist first. Like, that was a major thing for us because we're not, stylists aren't trained to diagnose a condition. And I think that, especially with, hair loss, which really annoys me too with the whole hair oil thing and, selling, I think it's damaging to sell people a dream to tell people a hair oil is going to grow back your hair. Like, I think it's disingenuous. I think that, you're selling a falsehood to people. That really bothers me. So, I think there's definitely room for dermatologists and stylists or anybody that touches any part of the body to work together so that there's proper information that's tested, that's being put out. Even me, before I go in and I pick ingredients for my products, I always go, I'm like looking on NIH, seeing if there's any studies. I feel like I would not be authentic if I was to make a claim and it's not based off of any science or research. So there's definitely room for that.
Okay, excellent. And then, there are actually conditions I was going to bring up that are more common in certain skin types, scalp conditions. Like in African American woman, we see CCCA, that's what we call it, cicatricial central, and we don't know why it happens. Are there any is there any advice you would give to maybe patients undergoing that? And how would your line help versus what should they do for styling? Because styling can be a big issue for these patients. And then dermatology wise, we do see a lot of it. It's not easy to treat, but we see a lot of it all stages. The sooner you can get help, the better it is, versus later in the later stages.
I think for us, for me, the biggest thing is, like we were just talking about, working in combination with dermatologists and understanding that, like, my products are there to support like healthy hair. But like I said, I don't have anything that's gonna grow, instantly grow anybody's hair back. So Now with in regards to like where they're at and styling, I make sure that my products aren't formulated with heavy, like a ton of emollients. They're not formulated to weigh the hair down. So I'm big into using, like working with my chemist to make sure that the moisture we're providing isn't coating the hair and like weighing it down with heavy oils. So that's big for me is like the actual chemistry behind the product and that it leaves the hair moisturized and lightweight. Even I do have a hair oil, but that's more so I use, actually use it on my face, but I also use it on my hair. It's very lightweight, it's Kalahari melon seed oil. So even like my foam is very volumizing. So those are things you want to look for in terms of if you are experiencing like hair shedding or areas of hair loss, you're probably going to want something that's a little bit more volumizing at the root, but also products that aren't coating the hair. Make sure, I always say, you want to make sure a lot of people really don't know how to shampoo their hair too, which is I find to be a problem. A lot of people aren't shampooing their scalp properly. I have a detox shampoo. Like I said, it has salicylic acid, glycolic acid in it. I always recommend people use it as a scalp mask, apply, leave it on for like 3 to 5 minutes. And then, they can shampoo their hair with it. Also, it helps to like lightly strip the hair, but it also helps to clean the scalp. And I tell people, I'm like, imagine your hair in sections of four. And then start with each section and make sure that you're washing your scalp. Because a lot of people will just like coat the outside of their hair and then they'll never get inside of their hair. So their whole scalp and hair on the middle of their head is basically not being touched with shampoo.
Yeah, no, I know. I even myself, I left conditioner the other day. I was like, what is that? It was like a piece of gum stuck on my hair. And I was like, that's a whole glob of conditioner I forgot to wash, you
Yeah,
know?
and it could lead to scalp irritation. And so that's where a lot of the, brands too, they have to be, that's why I'm so mindful because, I know what I know because I had a salon. Plus, when you're at a shampoo bowl, you really get to see how much hair is not being how it starts. And like a stylist is really taking time and making sure the whole head is cleansed. So I know that. So when I shampoo my hair, I really take a lot of time with it. But a lot of people aren't doing that. The shampoo's getting left, it's not getting rinsed out. So then you have like this oily based product that's just literally over time being like left on the scalp and the hair.
No, I agree. And what about styling in the African American female population? It's really big on that. And the movement towards more natural hair, you know. We've had all this stuff in the news about people's workplaces telling them to, you know, cut their hair or change their hair, and this movement against that and having just natural hair and accepting natural hair. And hospitals are notoriously very strict. You know, I worked at a hospital before I started my private practice on telling you how to look, even at work. They're definitely very, they have this idea in mind. What would you say? What are your thoughts on that? And, you know, the whole movement that we're seeing with natural hair, and styling in general, you know, and yeah, all that.
Well, I mean, for me, I feel like you should, it's your hair, so you should wear it how you want. I love the natural movement, because, but I feel like anybody should wear their hair the way they want to. And that's how I really feel. I just feel like whatever you do, whether or not you want to wear it natural or you want to, use some type of treatment to straighten it or anything, my thing is just like, are we taking care of our hair and our scalp? So that's my main thing. Like, where what are we doing to make sure what we have we're holding on to, and that's my key. Like I see a lot of young girls and I'm like, pulling it back, the edges, the center of the hair, which is like, and I tell them, because like I said, I'm 46, I'm like, you don't need your hair till you need it, so I mean, you don't want to like do too much, and then when you want to wear your hair, or you feel stuck because now you have traction alopecia on your edges or in the center, and now the hair won't grow back. You can't, it's not going to come back. And then now you're always stuck wearing something, or you're uncomfortable with how your hair looks, based off of a style. So my main thing is just the health of it. Like, let's just, whatever we decide, whatever you decide to do, let's make sure we're taking care of what we have and doing it in a healthy way.
Excellent. Okay. And then so what other things? How about the scalp? One of the things I'm noticing a lot is if the scalp is not healthy, the hair is obviously not going to be healthy.
Right.
And you even have a lot of hair loss from scalp conditions. You could have dandruff so bad it's just like a plaque just building up, not even letting the hair follicle breathe or come out.
Right.
What are your thoughts with that? And yeah.
I think, like I said, I think that, and I think it does work in a sense in a combination. So, like I said, this is where stylists and dermatologists have to work together, because that's something that may need a medicated shampoo that, a Celestine Blue or something is not gonna like take care of, or even a salon quality shampoo is gonna take care of. So that's also like working in tandem with a dermatologist. Also, clients conveying what the dermatologist has prescribed in terms of that shampoo, bringing it to a styling session. Also, the stylist making sure, they're disinfecting everything in between, everything is clean. I think that this is where we all have to work together, because if you have a severe case of dermatitis, like, I love my detox shampoo, but it may be something that can be used, but it may not fix the actual problem.
It's more of a compliment. Yeah, for
Yeah,
sure.
it's more of us working together. Like, okay, you went to see a dermatologist. This is the plan that they have you on. You, if you prescribe a shampoo or like drops, then you're bringing that to your appointment, and you're explaining to your and that's also down to a stylist going a consultation. But the client during that consultation and a scalp exam, for the stylist and then the client to work together and say, well, this is what I've been prescribed. And that way, that's being used during the appointment, so that it's, consistency across the board.
Okay, excellent. And then what do you personally do for your hair?
I just use my products. I mean, I'm like, I will say I had the salon for 10 years. So I learned a lot about my hair. So I love it. I love my hair. I braids it now because I'm going on vacation tomorrow. But I normally wear my hair natural like 95% of the time. So I tell everybody, like, everybody, even you, like, we all have to learn what works for our hair. So for me, and that's the biggest thing, is just learning like how your hair reacts, taking notice of it, and using which products like really are effective and give you the desired look you want. So I pretty much have, like, I wear one style, I wear a wash and go, and I pretty much have that down. So I'm like, oh, I am team wash and go, and you are gonna get, like, my hair is always gonna be amazing.
Wow. Where are you going on vacation?
I'm going to Barbados.
Okay. Yeah, I only got my hair braided once, but in dermatology, we're so hammered in with traction. And I have such thin hair, I can't do
Yeah, you
that.
can pull your edges and yeah, really pull on it.
Yeah, although I did have a what is it? It was a secretary that said she was sick. And she went to, I think it was it the Bahamas or Jamaica, came back with a head full of braids, and we knew that there was, no way you're getting your hair braided and you're sick and coming back with a tan. So it's just
You're like, what?
yeah, I know.
You're like,
But
I'm on Instagram. I know what's up.
yeah, exactly. We saw it on social media, but these are just, I just remember that from your braids. I was like, yep, the one time I caught my secretary coming back from
Like,
the
oh,
Caribbean,
okay.
head full of braids, head
Right,
hair.
and tans.
Yeah, exactly.
You're like, I'm on to you.
But yeah, so, well, I think any last parting thoughts on how to manage a full-time job with a blooming business, because I heard your business is doing really well.
It's doing something. I mean, it's a catch 22. I mean, the reality is you have to consistently push yourself. So it's just like pushing myself, but also making time for, learning to make time for what matters. And I feel like this year I did a better job of pouring more so into myself, my significant other, my daughter. She's always been around for my entrepreneurial journey. So, but she's 12 and, she requires towards the end of the salon. I mean, like I said, I always had a manager, but I was more in mommy mode than like at the salon all the time. But then I started naturally drying. So I had to learn this year that, and I had to give myself grace this year because a lot of times we're so hard on ourselves because we don't see that we're moving forward and we don't see all the accomplishments we've made. We're just focused on where we're not at and not where we've gotten to. And so I've had to like really work on that this year. Like even just talking to you now, I'm being like, well, I was in this store did this, I'm in this. And then I'm like, it's just me and an intern. Like I'm okay. I'm doing okay.
Yeah.
And so
you look from the outside in at all.
Yeah, like you're not just a little, yes, you're not $1 million brand and there's room to grow, but I've done things and and just to say, and I think that's for all of us, it's so hard running a business. Like we don't give ourselves grace. But this year I've tried to have like not have the laptop in the bed.
I do that a lot. I have literally fallen asleep with the laptop and I hear something thump on the floor and I'm like, what is that?
So I've had to like, the laptop doesn't belong in the bed anymore. So I have to have like a cutoff time, because I have to make time for those relationships and I can't expect them to pour into me and if I don't pour into them and I don't listen. So I don't bring them, even with my phone, I don't have to be on my phone. I put it down. Let me hear how your day was. Let's talk. Let's, let's tune in with each other. So this year I've tried to do a better job of that.
Great. Awesome. Well, I'm so glad to have you and get to know you as a guest on the show. And I will definitely try your products.
I'm going to come see you because I've been looking for a dermatologist. My daughter, she has like hyperpigmentation.
Oh, okay.
So. Yeah. And that actually was I went to a dermatologist. I took her. She had a scalp, something on her scalp. And then I took her there too to look at the hyperpigmentation. And when I tell you they had me in and out of that, I was like, you didn't tell me anything. She was like, oh, just put Cetaphil. I'm like, ma'am, I'm more elevated than that. I know what Cetaphil is. Like, I need you to, I just want you to look at it just so we're, I don't think that's just it. And I've been meaning to take her back to somebody else that I felt comfortable with who would take their time. I'm like, geez.
Yeah. Every, like I mentioned, every doctor is different. But I just try my best and I'm passionate about it. It was just too much work to get here.
Yes.
So, yeah.
And that's how you grow. You grow a clientele with people that like when you listen to people.
Exactly. It's all about the patient. It's customer. If it wasn't for the patient, you wouldn't have a job.
So she that's was how out of that room so fast. I was like,
what just happened? Yeah, I know. Well, we're not like that. We don't overbook people. It's actually it's not possible on the schedule. It's just even not even possible. So yeah, I'd be happy to help.
Okay, I like that. I'm gonna come. And that's how we used to do with the salon, like we never overbook people. Everybody got their time. And I'm like, that's the way you do it.
Yeah. I'll say the one bad thing that's hurting us is insurance. It's insurance that makes you do that. And I try to explain to patients because as the cost of living goes up, insurance every year and Medicare especially, they decrease the reimbursement only to doctors. They increase it for hospitals. It goes up proportional to inflation, but for doctors, it goes down. And, doctors in private practice, doctors who are self-employed, it goes down and you can't sustain that. So what you do is you increase the number of people you're seeing and you spend less time with them. You have to. So we don't do that because we actually cannot even get on a lot of insurances anyway, because South Florida is
Really?
saturated. Yeah, we take what we can. We take
Okay.
what we can. This is one of the reasons I'm starting the podcast, because I want to blow this up, now to make people aware that this is happening. We might join, like, just for the insurance part, a bigger group just for that, to capture a better market and things like that, and keep everything else separate. But that's the reason why.
I can believe it. I mean,
Yeah.
it's terrible out there. Even with my insurance, at one time, because I'm with the federal, like I said, the federal government, and I have Blue
Yeah.
Cross Blue Shield, and I could go anywhere. I was like, I can go anywhere. I have a PPO. I'm living my best life. And
Yeah.
even now, it's like they slowly are like taking so many things away.
Exactly.
It's really, it's difficult. It's unfortunate. So I can, and I mean, I work for Medicare, so I can only imagine the struggle. Do you have like a full, do you have a large practice?
I'm always busy, but it's not because of the insurance part. I'm
Okay.
always doing something, I'm never not working on something, but the insurance part has hurt us a lot. Yeah, they've hurt a lot, because they don't want to accept new doctors, because to them, why would they want more doctors to pay to help people? They want less. They want to keep a close net. You know what I mean? Like a closed
I
net.
had no clue.
Yeah, of course, of course. It's a whole thing. I just can't wait to tell the whole world about it. That's one of the reasons I started the podcast, because patients have no idea.
No, I thought
Yeah.
you guys just picked your, like, picked who
No,
you want to work with.
absolutely not. Absolutely. And I don't know why so many doctors stay quiet. I think it's because there's not many independent ones.
Yeah, can you
There's
request that, like, a
not.
doctor be added to a plan, or that's not how it
You
works?
can do that, but I don't think they'll listen. We've sent letters. You can always request me. I mean, usually when I'm not on a plan, I tell the patient, look, this is when I applied. This is my rejection letter. I tell the patient, you can reach out and see if they'll listen. But, I mean,
Why would they care?
yeah, to this day, I've never been accepted because of a patient. So that goes to show you how little of a difference it'll make. And you are the customer of the insurance company. So you should
Right.
be, yeah, they should listen to you. Yeah.
Ooh, I had no clue.
Yeah, I know. I know most people don't. I had no clue until I started opening a practice here and applying. Yeah.
And that affects how many clients you can get, because if you can't take their insurance, they're not going to come.
Yeah, we're mostly concierge, and we see people with insurance for the insurances we can get on. For the ones we can't, we just tell people. We just tell people. And I'm still open to joining like a bigger group just for the practice, the insurances, I mean, and to keep the rest of my practice separate, Because it takes a lot of time away. And yes, you can't help a big proportion of the people. You can, but they'd have to be self-pay,
Right.
Yeah. But anyway, but Miss Powell, we're more than willing to help you, and we can give you a list, or you send us, what your insurance is, and we'll look into it and do our best. Okay. All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye.
Have a great weekend. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.